Magyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Vinitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadatmayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Parakamalam, Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Sri Rupam, Sagrajatam, Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam, Tam Sajivam, Sadvaitam Sadvadhutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha, Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Cha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Thrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Kevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Gaur Premanande Haribo. Is anyone here for the first time? Oh, welcome.
Hi.
Nice to see you. Where are you from? And are you just visiting Washington, D.C.?
No, I live here now.
Oh, I see. And what you brought you to the program tonight?
Oh, yeah.
I see. Have you done kirtan before? You know about kirtan?
My
first time?
Yeah.
How did you like it?
I like it so much. I can sing along. I'm just kind of like bobbing.
Well, bobbing's okay. We have some cards that have the mantra printed out on them, and the mantra is, this song is very special. It's a kind of meditation, it's a prayer at the same time. And we'll give you a card. Could someone give her a card with the mantra on it? Actually, I have one right here. Here you are. On the back is a mantra. So, rhythm is a universal language. And anywhere you go in the world and you there make some good rhythm, people will come and want to participate, sort of natural. Even animals get attracted. And music also is universal. And singing is natural when you're happy. So we add all these things together. And it becomes an attractive mix. And is it your first time?
Mm-hmm.
And where are you all from?
I live here in Gaithersburg.
And how did you find out about the program?
They were distributing books, and then Bhagavad Gita, they came to my apartment, and then they told that they are having this program today. So.
Thanks for coming. Who did you meet? Do you remember?
I met Loka.
You met Loka? And Mukesh also?
Yeah, he distributed
him. Oh, that's so nice. And here's Mukesh.
She started crying when she saw this.
Is that right? Wow. Both of you, thank you very much for coming. It's nice to have you here. Anybody else? How about the second time? That's always even better than the first time. Here for the second time. Yay! Well, I'm finding that these gatherings are taking place everywhere around the world. My friend Satyadev Prabhu, who I live near in California, I just met. We were in Japan together. We go there regularly. And before I met him in Japan, he was in China. And in China, you can't just go in and do whatever you want. Of course, you can't do that anywhere, but you can more here than you can in China. And in China, there are lots and lots of people gather together for this kind of singing and practice. Thousands and thousands. And there's no central meeting place. They're all doing it because there are little units everywhere, all over China. In other countries too. And the person who started all this, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was a great teacher of masses of people about how to, without changing your lifestyle, without changing your hair or your style in life, becoming spiritual, which is what everyone's looking for. And he taught that there are three paths to life. One path is the path of material enjoyment. And this path of material enjoyment, I'll talk a little bit about the three paths. And then another path is a path of called renunciation, giving up the path of material enjoyment. And then in the middle, there's a path of dedication. So he taught the path of dedication, and that anyone, anywhere, in any situation of life could naturally take to that path and be successful. That's what's so popular about this philosophy, which is a philosophy which is substantiated through detailed knowledge that's given in books called the Vedas, which address many, many different aspects of society, human, animal, everything. From medicine, you might have heard of the Ayurveda. Ayurveda shows you how to be healthy and balance your life and live longer and healthier. And then there is science, how to build things so that the space is apportioned properly, so that you have better consciousness when you're living in the house, like feng shui, only it's called vastu. And then there are aspects of how to organize society, and then there are, in the Vedas, there are a section for people who have had enough with moving around in the world, and they want to know more about why they're actually here. My brother and I, when we were kids, we used to go in the backyard and sleep out. It was very exciting, sleep on the back lawn rather than inside a room. Surprising what you get when you just look around. Often we don't see much because I'm inside a house, and then I'm inside a car, and then I'm inside a cubicle, and I really don't get a chance. A couple of friends of mine had driven up to Big Sur, which is on the coast of California. It's a very natural area, and there are not a lot of establishments there that produce light. And they're from India. They came from a big city in India. And they happened to be there at night, and they stepped out of the house, and for the first time they had seen stars. I mean, really seen stars. Have you ever really seen stars? Like, they're so brilliant, they're so prominent that they practically knock you backwards. And you think for a second, where am I? I'm in a universe somewhere. Has that ever happened to you? Seeing the stars? It's rare. I mean, if you look outside in any city, they get washed out because it's what's called light pollution. I don't get to see the stars. I also don't get to see the sun, because I'm too busy going to work and I put the visor down, and why is the sun getting in my eyes? But it's the biggest event of the day. What is the sun anyway? I mean, these are the kind of questions my brother and I used to think about when we were lying next to each other in sleeping bags on the back lawn, and we'd look up at the sky and we'd say, what do you think that is? And I'd say, I have no idea. What is that? And we would fascinate each other for hours, just speculating on where we were. And then we'd get into a topic, we'd say, well, what do you think death is? And he'd say, well, I've heard, you know, death is just the end of everything. I'd say, how could it be the end of everything? We're here now, and it would all just stop. And we'd work ourselves into a frenzy sometimes. He would say, well, I don't want to die then. And I said, well, I don't want to die either. And he said, well, I don't want to die. We'd jump out of our sleep bags, run back in the house to my parents and say, we don't want to die. They say, what happened? What'd you swallow? You know? I said, no, we just don't want to die. And they say, that's all right. You're not going to die. And I remember they'd feed us hot milk and honey and put us back to bed. and to say, you know, it's okay, it's okay. And I was thinking, how do they know it's okay? They're probably going to die too. And so, in the Vedas, there's a declaration, Atato Brahma Jignasa, and it's written in a code to give us information of what the purpose of life is, like a direction book to say, why are we here? And it says, Atato Brahma Jignasa. And Ataha means therefore, and because it's written in code, you have to unpack it a little bit. It's therefore, because you've tried everything else in the world, and it's not been to your full satisfaction. You never quite reach what you want in this life. This is, I'm talking about, I'll touch briefly on the path of material enjoyment is sometimes compared to a mirage in the desert. It's called a mrigachrishni rupa. Rupa means form. Mrigachrishni rupa means the kind of form that an animal would run after, like a deer. When they'd see the water in the desert, I'm getting some kind of shaking noise over here. What to speak of that? Hare Krishna. So, the mirage appears to be water. Have you ever seen one? Have you? Anybody? Where did you saw one? Where did you see one, Lakshmi?
Oh, I don't remember. Some desert somewhere.
I saw it in Death Valley. My parents took us on vacation once to Death Valley. Thanks. And it looks just like a lake in the distance. And to us kids, we thought it was a lake, and we said, there's a lake. And they said, that's not a lake. That's a mirage. And we said, you're wrong. That's a lake. And they said, mirage. And we said, lake. And they said, mirage. We said, lake. Mirage, lake, mirage, lake. And after a while, we started to believe them, because the more we drove, the more it stayed equidistant. It didn't change, and we began to realize that was what they were telling us the truth. But it looks exactly like a lake. Therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, a great saint named Prahlad Maharaj said, the kind of happiness that you get in the material world, on the material path, it's like that. It's like a mirage. As you go after it, it stays equidistant. You never quite get it. It just appears like you're going to get it. Like if you go to somebody's house for dinner, and you're sitting out in the dining room waiting, and they're banging the pots, and you hear things going on, but they never really bring the dinner out. You're hungry. You'd like to eat. It seems like you're going to eat, but you never really eat. This is the material life, and there's a name for it that Prahlad Maharaj says, that he calls it Shruti Sukha. So in Sanskrit, Sukha means happiness, and Shruti means to hear. So you hear about it, but you don't actually get it. That's material life. It's a mirage. You can chase it. So animals don't know any better, and they'll go after the mirage until they drop dead. And this is the material path, sort of in a nutshell. That you work hard, you hear about happiness, it's always just ahead, but you never quite get it. Then there are people that Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita called jnanis. And jnani means somebody who thinks about things a lot and looks at what's actually happening. Rather than just going, they analyze and they look at what they're getting out of life, and they figure out that actually that's not real water. It's a reflection of water. It appears to be water, and therefore they stop running, and they don't chase the water, because they take the path of renunciation. They say, I'm not going after this world because I'll never quite get there, therefore I'll stop running. That's reasonable, isn't it? Is it? But only problem is, they still don't get any water. They don't get any water. Because they've stopped running doesn't mean, it means they're not going to pursue the fake water, but it doesn't mean they're actually going to quench their thirst. So then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, there's a third path, and that's the path of dedication. And I hope we have a dictionary ready, because there's a few words that I'd like to look up as we go. But the can we look up dedication? The man with the dictionary. Okay, so the path of dedication means that can have a couple dictionaries. Sure. Thank you. Well, basically, dedication means there has to be something, someone to dedicate things to. And there's a recognition that all the things in the world, including my own body and mind, they're coming from some source. And in this path that Lord Chaitanya taught, which is based on the Bhagavad Gita, we understand that there's a divine source to everything. And it's personal. That source is personal. And therefore, we understand that everything we see and everything we have for ourselves actually belongs to someone else. It belongs to that divine source. And in the life of dedication, we dedicate everything to our divine source, to God. And in that, there's actually a taste. We actually, our taste for happiness actually gets quenched. This is what Lord Chaitanya taught. And he taught a simple system by which we could dedicate everything in our lives so that we could experience happiness at every minute. And Bhagavad Gita explains that someone who's on that path doesn't worry about the future and doesn't lament about what's happened in the past, but they live in the present. And they're fully happy all the time, dedicating everything that they have in service. And recently I heard an interview. It was a study that was done on a university campus where hundreds of students were asked whether they would prefer to give or receive. Because it is the season when people start thinking intensely about how to give gifts and things. So they were all asked, what do you like better? What's a better experience for you, giving or receiving? And what do you think they said? They said giving. Every single one of them said it feels better to give than it does to receive. After all, when you receive, you have to think about, what do I do now? But when you give, the idea is behind Lord Chaitanya's teachings, the more you give, the bigger you become. It's a contrary to what I think of when I'm trying to enjoy limited resources. They taught me in economics class that the study of economics is based on limited resources. So I'm always thinking about the limited resources, and the more I give away to someone else, the less I have for me. Therefore, I draw borders and I say, these are my borders and that's yours. And when you come across, you're going to have to fill out a card. And there's a lot of wrangling that goes on to live that way. And in the life of giving, the more I give, the bigger I become. The more I grow. It's counterintuitive, but this is the life of dedication. It's a life of giving. And what does dedication mean, according to the dictionary? Yes, Loka? It
says, to devote to the worship of a divine being.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow.
To devote to the worship of a divine being, especially with sacred rites, and to set apart for a definite purpose.
That's amazing. I did not know that. Well, there it is. Can you read it again?
To devote to the worship of a divine being, especially with sacred rites.
Okay. So, there it is. There's the philosophy. To devote...
To the worship of a divine being.
To devote what?
To the worship.
To devote to the worship of a divine being. That's dedication? Okay, so in that devotion to a divine being, there's actually a taste, and there's an experience of happiness, and it's much better than material happiness. Material happiness is there, no doubt, but a poet compared it once to when we're thirsty, we're in the desert, and we need water. And someone comes along and says, I'll give you water. And you put out your hand, and then they take an eyedropper and they put one drop of water in your hand. You can't argue that it's not water, but it's just not enough. So material happiness is like that. And the life of renunciation means frustration. I've experienced frustration in trying to enjoy this material world, therefore I renounce it and I give it up. But it's not mine to renounce. If I go into the Bank of America and I say, I renounce this bank, then I'll be accused of lunacy because it's not mine, I don't own it. Nor do I own anything in the universe. I'm allotted some things for a period of time, but I also have to give those up. And they're not mine. So the life of dedication makes a lot of sense, and it's instantly effective. By dedicating whatever I have to the divine being and living in that way, then I become happy immediately. So this chant that we're chanting, the Hare Krishna chant, this is a mantra which is offered as a prayer of dedication. It's a way of saying, I'm living a life of dedication, I dedicate everything to you, to the divine source. Like that. And the names are, they relate to our divine source and the divine being, where everything, from whom everything comes. So there's through the mantra, there's a connection, and through the feeling of dedication when we chant that mantra, there's a special feeling of happiness and elation, and we notice it wherever we go. I was in Toronto and I saw people dancing on the street when we go out sometimes. See, this is a special drum that we use. It's called a kol. And it's made out of clay, and then it's stretched across with cow leather from a cow that's died naturally, and then there's some clay on the end. And there's another drum that's similar to this called a tabla. Do you play tabla? You teach tabla?
Little
tabla. And it looks like this, only that it's divided in half. You might have seen that. The tabla player will sit on the floor and then play with two hands. Only difference is, with this, there's a strap so you can put it around your neck and you can stand up and dance and walk around with it. And you can go around town playing the drum. The tabla, you can't do that. You have to sit in one room. So this drum was specially made so you can go out and sing and dance while you sing. So sometimes we take out this drum and a few other instruments, like the kartal. Do we have one in here? This percussion instrument made out of bell metal. Do you have another one? A smaller one? Can you make a sound with that? Just make it ring. See if it has a sweet sound. Nice, huh? So we have these two percussion instruments. I mean, you can just clap your hands and sing the mantra also. But these instruments add a special flavor to it. So sometimes we go out into public and we'll set up in a financial district or, you know, anywhere and sing. And so just last weekend we were in Toronto, my wife and I, and we went out with a group of other chanters to various locations in Toronto. And in one of the places was called the Dufferin Mall. A lot of people were coming for shopping, and we were chanting, and there was a young woman who came along and was very interested in what we were doing. She had no idea what it was, but she started to get a clue. She was somebody gave her a card like that, a little mantra card, and then someone explained a little bit of what it was, and she started dancing along with the other chanters. But one of the things was that she had a cigarette in one hand. So she had a cigarette in one hand, and she had the mantra card in the other hand, so she could read the mantras. So she was dancing with cigarette in one hand and the mantra card in the other hand, very intensely, dancing along to the mantra, and happily so. And as she danced, I noticed that at a certain point she threw the cigarette away. And this is another thing about the chanting. It's a kind of yoga, actually, because the sounds themselves are very powerful. And they have an effect on the state of our heart and the state of our mind. They elevate us spiritually just by hearing the sound. So this was a dramatic case where she was smoking a cigarette and for some time attached to it, because those things are expensive, I think. It's probably like $5 per cigarette by now. But she abandoned it suddenly for the sake of dancing in the kirtan because she was experiencing something better. And this is one of the other tenets of yoga. Yoga is meant to connect to our higher self and our higher source of happiness. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who I'm mentioning was the great teacher of this 500 years ago, he taught that if you just do the chant, you'll experience the perfection of yoga, which is to see your higher self, experience your relationship with the higher self with the Supreme Being in this life of dedication. And you'll feel joyful and happy. And when you're joyful, what do? When someone calls you and says, you just won the lottery, you've won $20 million, what's the next thing you do?
Start dancing.
You start dancing, and then what else do? You keep it to yourself, right? You don't tell anybody. You call somebody, probably. You tell somebody else. So joy wants to share itself. When you're happy and joyful, you know, dancing, telling other people. So it's natural, this kind of sharing of the mantra and expressing it out loud. It's kind of singing. I mean, singing and dancing, it's not logically explained. Why are you singing? Why are you dancing? I'm just happy. What does happiness mean? I don't know. I just am. And that's what the Bhagavad Gita says, that we are, actually. We, as spiritual beings, are happy. We're naturally happy. And we always exist. And so yoga means looking inside. And I'm going to read a verse from the Bhagavad Gita now. May I have one Bhagavad Gita? Thank you. Any questions so far? I really like this Bhagavad Gita. Someone's been really studying a lot. Their notes, I'm inspired. We've been looking at a progression of verses in the Gita, and this one just happens to be appropriate right now. And it's the fifth chapter in the 24th verse, and I'll read the Sanskrit out loud, and I'll read the translation, okay? Yonta sukotara ramas tatantar jyotireva yaha sa yogi brahma nirvanam brahma bhuto digacchati. Krishna speaking, the Bhagavad Gita, and he says, one whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately he attains the Supreme. And here's the purport, an explanation of the verse. Unless one is able to relish happiness from within, how can one retire from the external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? A liberated person enjoys happiness by factual experience. He can, therefore, sit silently at any place and enjoy the activities of life from within. Such a liberated person no longer desires external material happiness. This state is called Brahma Bhuta, attaining which one is assured of going back to Godhead, back to home. So I began by talking about the Vedas and how there are many branches of the Vedas. And then I told about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his different paths for walking in the world and the path of dedication. And in the Vedas, there is a section called the Upanishads. And the Upanishads are the first section of the Vedas which address something that's transcendental, and that is asking what's beyond just the normal course of activities, what's beyond just maintaining myself in this world. And the Upanishad means to sit up close. And the implication is that now I'm really interested in finding out who I am. Atato Brahma Jignasa, I mentioned that also. That means now, therefore, because you've tried everything else, is the time to inquire, to ask, who am I and what's the best thing? What's the greatest thing? Brahman means the greatest. So atato brahma jignasa means inquire, ask now. So the idea is that when you come to the human form of life, this verse is being addressed to humans. Now, therefore, you have the opportunity. You can inquire and you'll get the answers. And yoga means plus. Yoga means plus. It means that you'll get all the answers. You'll get everything you want if you just inquire in the right way. So atato brahma jignasa, it's very optimistic. It means just ask the right questions. And the reason I'm not getting what I want and the reason I'm suffering is because I'm asking for the wrong things. Krishna, name for God, is compared to a desire tree. And in the Vedas, a desire tree is described as a tree that under which you sit, and if you desire anything, it will fulfill your desire, whatever you want. So if you go to a desire tree and you say, please let a bag of hammers fall upon my head, and a bag of hammers falls upon your head, then who's to blame? You or the tree? What do you think? It's my fault. I asked for the bag of hammers to fall on my head. I asked the wrong thing. But if I ask for the best thing, then spiritual happiness, then I'll achieve that. So yoga, the big plus, is mentioned here in the Bhagavad Gita, that we have the opportunity. The Vedas are calling to us. They're saying, there's more than the status quo. You can actually reach the highest thing, the highest happiness, and now's your opportunity. It's urging, don't stay in the darkness. Don't settle for the status quo. Ask for the greatest thing, and you'll get it. That's what the Vedas are saying. So in the Upanishads, this transcendental section of these books of knowledge called the Vedas, it's the time in which a person understands, I can get much more. I can actually have unrestricted happiness. In the material world, there's mixed happiness, and that's not very nice. Mixed happiness. It's there, but it's mixed with something else that just ruins it, it spoils it. But you can have unrestricted, unmixed happiness, the Vedas say. So the Upanishad means sit up close and try to find out. Find out where that's being spoken of, and you move up to the front row, and you lean in because you want to hear every bit of it, because that's where you want to go, and that's the topic of the Bhagavad Gita, how to actually attain this highest happiness, the highest pleasure, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 500 years ago brought a system of yoga that is called the Anandakanda. There are many different paths of yoga, but his path was called the Anandakanda, or the path of joy, path of happiness. That through this chanting, it produces this unrestricted joy. And meanwhile, all the other things that we're holding on to, like that woman with the cigarette, these unwanted desires, unnecessary burden that I'm carrying around with me, I throw it away because I become preoccupied with the happiness I'm getting. That's a better kind of yoga than trying to restrain my senses. I get something more, so I give away all the other things. They just fly out. That's the kind of chanting that we do, the Kevala Anandakanda. So in this verse, Krishna is talking about how the real yogi becomes inwardly oriented. He or she is looking within to find real happiness and experiencing within, and is absorbed in this kind of lifestyle, dedication and happiness. And now we'll take a couple of reflections. That means anything you've heard so far that's stuck in your mind, that was useful, that you can take out with you, and or if there's some questions.
From where I'd like to share something.
Yes.
So I've been struggling with something in my life, and I've been praying for a change. And I guess I haven't received the change that I'm hoping for. And I've been struggling, like I'm really praying hard and I'm really praying sincerely, and why am I not getting it? And just through books I'm reading and things, I've started seeing a pattern in a message. At least that's how I'm perceiving it. where the message I've received is, you have to ask for something very specific. Like, I'm like, God, you're God. You know what I need. I have a, you know, I have this gap or pain. You know what it is. Fix it. So that's kind of, I'm sorry, but that's kind of my prayer. That's been my prayer. And then the clarity I've been receiving, and it's just like I'm reading a book, like the Love, Pray, Eat, that it's just a book somebody wrote. But I got a message from that, like, you have to pray for something really specific. And it's not the ask, but it's the realization of what it is that you really need that you have to voice in your prayer. And I started seeing a lot of that, and that's what the last 5 minutes of what you said, that's again a reiteration for me that, oh, maybe that's, you know, it's the specific thing that you asked for. If that is in fact what you need at that time, then you're likely to receive what it is that you need. Does that make sense? I mean, am I just thinking that I've got all these signals and these messages when I really haven't? I mean, does that make sense?
Makes sense to me. I'll comment on it if you like.
Certainly.
Just in general, I'll comment on that. Okay, when I say Krishna, I'm talking about the divine source. This name Krishna means God. It means the divine source of everything. It also means that it's that divine source is all attractive and benevolent. Okay, so if I have desires, the Srimad Bhagavatam recommends that whatever desires I have, I bring them to Krishna. And even if I have desires which may seem like material desires, that, well, better to bring those too, because Krishna is like the sun, he's purifying. And when I bring those desires, then Krishna will purify the desire also. There's another level of prayer. Prahlad Maharaj says to Krishna that if you desire to give me anything, please arrange it so there's no material desires within my heart at all. So I don't want anything material. So I'm not asking for anything. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's also described a situation where somebody knows that material desires may lead to frustration. They also know that and have faith that Krishna is supplying all those desires, but still they keep asking for material things. And in that situation, Krishna understands this person really wants me, he wants pure devotional service, but he or she is asking for something else, and therefore Krishna fulfills the desire, but in such a way that the person doesn't ask for it again. And at the same time, he gives himself, which is actually what we want. What everyone ultimately wants, according to the science of bhakti, is what's called rasa. And that's our real enjoyment. What I'm actually after is relationship. That's where the happiness is, in love. Love, loving relationship. And that loving relationship is available with Krishna. And if I want something that's contrary to that or outside of my relationship with Krishna, then ultimately I'll be disappointed. So my point is that whatever level of desire I may have now, if I approach Krishna with that desire, that he will help clarify it as I go forward. And he says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham satati yuktanam pajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. If someone approaches me sincerely, then I'll give them the intelligence so that they can come to me. And he'll make a perfect arrangement. So sometimes, even, it's described in the path of devotion that one may become frustrated. And that's not always a bad thing. Oftentimes, my greatest breakthroughs come when I'm the most frustrated or the most troubled by something. In fact, throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's a book, 18,000 verses, which is describing in many, many different ways the path of devotion. And in that, there are many examples of people who had desires, and they became completely frustrated. And that was the point at which they had their biggest breakthrough. In fact, in this book, Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter is called Observing the Armies, but actually in other editions, the first chapter is called The Yoga of Despair. The Yoga of Despair. Have you ever been despairing? What is despair? Can we look it up really quick? When I feel utter despair, what do? I pray. I reach out in a very sincere way. Everything's lost. There's nothing else I can do. And I reach, as they say, I dig deep and bring out my most sincere prayer at that time. So there's a way in which I may ask for something that's not good for me, and because I'm sincere, I may get in return a period of despair through which I actually learn how to, dig deep and find out my essential self and ask for something that's even better.
That rings so true, because that's how I felt. I was asking for something, and then I went through this period where I almost wanted to cover up the idols and my books and just put them away, because this is not working for me. I'm reaching out and you're not responding at all. But then through it all, I started really thinking about it and all of these signs that I feel that I was getting. And then I realized that, I was not going about it the right way. That's not what I really need. This is what I really need. And I suddenly, the despair is gone. And I actually felt kind of calm and relaxed, like, okay. It's not as bad as I thought it was. I wasn't really abandoned. I was just looking at it the wrong way, And I realized that it was blinders in front of my eyes, and it's not that God is so busy looking at the other billion people that he forgot about me. But, I felt a sense of calm after that, and I'm glad you're saying what you're saying, so I just thought that I'm building up these little stories and making myself real special in my own head. But thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That was fascinating, really. Despair.
It's Latin, and it says to lose all hope, to be overcome by a sense of futility or defeat.
To lose all hope, to be overcome by a sense of futility or defeat. In those situations, we can actually find our self. Find ourself. Other reflections? Anything that's stuck in your mind? Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What is your name, by the way?
Avantika.
Avantika. Hare Krishna. Thank you. And your name is?
Richard.
Hare Krishna.
I've been, for a while, struggling in my mind between when a lot of people make the difference between material things and things that are non-material. Some of them call them spiritual, or however you want to call them, and I don't seem to really grasp when one of them ends and the other one, or if that difference is such black and white. Because I may, for example, I may not wish to have a car or clothes or a house, say, material things. But then I may wish to be happy in my heart and be happy with someone, but that happiness is, I feel it in my body, so my body is a material thing, same as feeling connected with everyone, so it may not be an objective thing like wood, but I do feel it in my body, and my body is material. So I don't know what to do about it.
Okay. Well, it's a nice question. What's the difference between matter and spirit? Let's start with that. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about his different energies. There are varieties of energies. And Krishna says, Bhumir apu analo vayu, kam mano bhudirevacha, ahankara ityame bhinna prakriti rashtada. earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, false ego. These are my eight separated material energies. So he calls them inferior energy. And then he says, Aparayamitastvanyam prakritim vidime param jivabhutam mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. He says, besides these inferior energies, there's superior energy of mine, which is the living entity, what we call the jivatma, or the soul. It's not that we have a soul, we are the soul. We're a unit of consciousness, eternal consciousness that is part of the supreme consciousness. We're like a ray of sunshine, and then there's the source, the sun. So we're part of that big sun. But we're conscious and we have the same qualities, sentient qualities. And matter wouldn't matter unless there was somebody to observe it. We're the observer of matter. So there's a difference between us and the body. And this is, by the way, what Krishna defines as knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Kshetrajnam shapimam vidhi sarva kshetri shubharata kshetra kshetrajnino jnanam yatach jnanam patam mama. He said, this is the definition of knowledge, to know the difference between you and your body. And so he calls you the knower of the body. So the body is called a field, actually. And you're living in that field. In another place in the Bhagavad Gita, the body is described as a city of nine gates. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We have these holes in our body, and they're compared to gates. So think of your body as a city, and you're living inside it. So you're the conscious entity, and as soon as you leave the body, your body becomes useless. No more interest. Nobody will have any interest. Even the people who love you the most will zip you up and take you out, the body out, as you know, very quickly after you leave. Oh, there'll be some ceremony to honor the fact that you were in the body, but the body itself becomes useless because you're no longer animated. So what's animating the world is actually the conscious living beings, the little what are called jivatmas. So there is a difference between the inferior nature and the superior nature. Now, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that those energies can be transformed when they're dedicated to the original source. And he gives a verse, Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagnau brahmanohutam brahmaiva tena gantavyam brahma karma sabhanida. A lot of brahmas in that, and brahma means spirit. So the essence of the verse is, when a person, an example is giving, is offering something to the Supreme, then the offering turns to spirit, and the person who's offering also becomes spiritualized, and the entire arena of sacrifice in which it's being offered, because the purpose is to offer it to the divine source, it's dedicated. And therefore, it transforms. It no longer is material. And an example is of an iron bar. When you put an iron bar in fire, and you leave it in long enough, it becomes hotter and hotter, and then it becomes fire-like. You ever seen a blacksmith? They put iron in the fire, and after a while it glows, and it's no longer iron, actually. It's transformed into fire. So, by the association with spirit, which means that it's whatever material things we have that we dedicate to the Supreme, they change in nature and they actually become spiritualized. Because ultimately, all of the energies come from the Supreme Source. So how can you say that one's material and one's spiritual? You can say because of how they're being used, how they're being dedicated, or if someone's trying to enjoy them, they turn into a different kind of energy. They transform. Energy can be transformed. So through the process of what Lord Chaitanya taught, of how to live your life of the life of dedication, you use everything you have. Remember, we're not into the path of renunciation, of throwing it away and saying, that's material, I reject it. That's like going into the Bank of America and saying, I reject it. It's not yours to reject. And you can't enjoy it either, because it's actually There's a beginning and an end to that kind of enjoyment. Spirit doesn't mix with matter in that way. But if you dedicate it, that energy transforms. And that comes to a kind of a philosophy called Yukta Vairagya. And it means you can use everything that you have. And when you use it as a dedication, a sincere dedication to the Supreme, it transforms into spiritual energy. So if you give up things saying they're material, that's a kind of false renunciation, because you could have used them in a dedicated way in order for them to become spiritualized. So the answer to your conundrum is to live the life of dedication. And ask yourself, what are all the things I have and how can they be dedicated? And you can dedicate all those things for the divine. That's the definition of dedication, right? You devote them to the divine deity. And if you do that, they become spiritualized, just like putting the iron rod in fire. And then everything you have that you use in that way becomes spiritual and not material. Did that help?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
We'll take... yes. And your name for the benefit of everyone here.
My name is Divya.
Okay, Divya. One thing I would dedicate would be my car. Because I live 30 minutes away from the temple in San Jose. And I use that car in a dedicated sense. I don't drive anywhere unless it's to do my dedicated service. And therefore the car becomes spiritualized. Dedicate my hand.
I drive to the temple.
I drive to the temple, yes.
Okay.